This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. The state Senate has passed a bill that could restart executions in North Carolina. The measure does away with a provision that requires a doctor to be present at lethal injections. Instead, it allows any licensed medical professional to be there, and it keeps details about lethal injection drugs off the public record. Those provisions have been at the heart of a debate over executions in North Carolina for nearly a decade. The state has not put anyone to death since 2006. And there was breaking news this morning. Governor Pat McCrory announced the resignation of State Transportation Secretary Tony Tata. The governor says Tata is stepping down immediately. WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri has been following these stories, and he joins us now from Raleigh. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Phoebe.
So what do we know about Tony Tata's resignation?
It was abrupt, caught most people around here by surprise, and we don't know much at this point. The release from the governor that came out this morning says that Tata would like to focus on family and personal matters and also continue his pursuit as an author. He's had four fiction books that have been very successful. But beyond that, it seems to have been somewhat of a hastily called announcement. We'll see if there is, a next political step for him or if he's, bowing out of the public eye for the foreseeable future.
And for people around the Capitol, I mean, does this come as a surprise? Was there any murmurs of this potentially happening?
Tony Tata, who has ascended from Brigadier General in the Army to Wake County School Superintendent to Secretary of Department of Transportation, sat down for an interview with the News and Observer yesterday. And at no point during that interview, according to the News and Observer article that posted after the announcement today, did Tony Tata make any announcement or give any indication that he would be resigning today. So at least to us here in the press corps, there were no hints that this was coming.
Well, we'll see what comes of it in the next few days. Let's move on to the death penalty. Tell us about the current law and why there's been a moratorium on executions.
So executions in North Carolina have been around for hundreds of years. First half of the 20th century, executions were a possible sentence for crimes, not only murder, but also rape and burglary. Statute changed in the 1970s. And since then, between 3 and 4 dozen people have been executed, almost all by lethal injection in the state. But nobody has been executed since Samuel Flippin. He was the last person in August of 2006. And the reason, in large part, that there's been a de facto moratorium has been due to challenges of the Eighth Amendment, which is the cruel and unusual punishment. And folks have made enough challenges and different kinds of challenges that there have not been executions in North Carolina during that time period. There also, for a period of time, was a hurdle. This has since been removed or cleared, but there was a hurdle when the state medical board said that doctors would not be taking part in executions because of a moral compromise. So this law that's being considered now in the chambers would obviously take the doctor provision out of that. That hasn't been a real hurdle in the last couple of years, as I mentioned, but what this bill would do is that it would not require a doctor to be in the death chamber. It would just require a medical professional to administer a lethal dose.
And a medical professional could mean a nurse, a nurse practitioner, or an EMT.
Or a physician assistant, yeah. And I think conventional wisdom is, well, this is an injection, and you're talking about nurse practitioners or PAs or EMTs. These are folks who administer those kinds of things on a regular basis, and it's certainly not out of the realm of comfortability and what's common for them. One of the challenges, I talked to a couple of critics of this bill, and one critic said to me, the one key area of concern is what happens when something goes wrong with and they call these cocktails. So oftentimes when somebody's put to death, it's three different drugs. But this isn't like penicillin. This isn't something that many people have had in their system before. So what if they have an adverse reaction? And one of the concerns from critics is, well, are we putting somebody in place that can deal with that? If so-and-so who's been convicted and is facing death, if they have an adverse reaction and, you know, they don't die and it's a botched execution, are we putting medical professionals in place who know how to deal with some of those challenges? And we've seen some of these circumstances where executions did not go as planned in several states in the last 12 to 18 months, in Oklahoma and Missouri and Ohio. And that's something that, that critics are concerned about happening here.
But also within this new bill, it will allow that the public will not have any real details about the drugs or drug cocktails used in the injection that an individual receives.
Right. Supporters say this is a provision to help and protect the companies that are supplying the drugs that are being used to execute people. But critics of this bill are saying, hang on a second, have we not learned from other states where transparency has been limited? And, you know, the public has a right to know. The public has an ability to know. The defendants should know what exactly is being used and how it's being administered. So, yes, and the writing on the wall here is that this lack of transparency, or this level of secrecy, as some have called it, is something that will very quickly lead to legal challenges.
The bill also changes the oversight of executions in North Carolina. Who would be in charge of the proceedings?
Moving forward, it would essentially put this under the Department of Public Safety. And opponents and critics have said that, you know, right now there is, although there have not been executions in nearly 9 years, there's more of a process, and this would remove oversight. And along those lines of things that you mentioned, Phoebe, in terms of not providing details about process and methodology and, you know, what the cocktail is, there also would not be involvement from other agencies, and there wouldn't be a check or a balance, so to speak.
Let's move on to another big topic going on this week. A federal judge is still hearing arguments about the state's election law, which went on trial a few weeks ago. What's the latest from that case in Winston-Salem?
Closing arguments could begin as early as this afternoon. This is a federal trial challenging a North Carolina state law that was enacted 2 years ago. That law made significant changes to North Carolina voting procedures, and it reduces early voting days. It eliminates same-day registration and out-of-precinct balloting. It does away with a preteen early registration program for 16 and 17-year-olds. And it's moving up and down in the court system right now. It made it as far to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and it is now back before this federal judge, who is weighing whether or not the changes are disproportionately burdensome to African Americans and Latinos.
Why haven't state lawmakers testified in that trial?
State lawmakers are invoking privilege. This is a protection, a privilege that state lawmakers here have had at their disposal going back to the 1780s. It's not often used, but essentially what it does is it protects lawmakers from having any speech or debate that they've participated in while serving as lawmakers from being used against them in a court of law. Now, you know, this is widely used across the country, but there are some who say it is going too far in this case because lawmakers are not the defendants here. Lawmakers have, you know, refused to turn over documents, and, you know, those who have been subpoenaed don't have to testify. I did speak with one representative, Democrat Mickey Mishaw, who's from Durham, and he thinks that in this instance the privilege goes too far.
Here you're talking about a constitutional right, and you should not be exercising any type of legislative privilege trying to protect or defuse constitutional rights.
So that was Mickey Mishaw. He testified last week. He chose to testify, and, you know, he talked about the history of discriminatory voting practices in North Carolina and said, you know, in his eyes, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the intention or the motivation behind this law. However, legislative privilege exists, and it exists to protect lawmakers from frivolous and endless lawsuits. As I mentioned, you know, wide-reaching across the United States, the federal government has provision as well. Steve Huffner, a political science professor at Ohio State University, has studied privilege and is very well-versed in its context.
We could have just a sort of unlimited number of claims that citizens would bring against their elected representatives, saying, you didn't represent my interests, and I'm now suffering. I wrote to you and I told you that if you voted in favor of this bill, it's going to ruin my business. And you voted in favor of this bill and you ruined my business. I want you to pay for my business, right?
So, in short, privilege exists as a protection and a way for the legislative process to move forward, or trying to keep it moving somewhat on the straight and narrow.
So what's next for this trial? We could have some news this afternoon.
We could have closing arguments as early as today. This is not a jury trial. It's a bench trial. The judge is Thomas Schroeder. He's a conservative judge who was nominated by George W. Bush back in 2007. He will likely rule by the end of the year. Then almost certain is an appeal to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. And talking with some of the attorneys, you know, what's expected is that this judge is not going to undo the law. But what is expected is that an appeal will come. It will end back up in Richmond. And there, part of this law was struck down a year ago. And that's had an effect on this trial. But the three judges who ruled on the new North Carolina voting law in Richmond a year ago were all nominated by Democratic presidents. So this law has a greater chance, speaking broadly here, of being struck down or part of it being undone when this likely reaches Richmond, which could happen this winter.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us about it. It's a trial that's being watched closely all over the country. Jeff Tiberi is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Just ahead, a literature professor from UNC Asheville turns a series of comedic essays into her memoir. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.